Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Ron Greer, Dr. Paul Hall, Stephanie Thayer, and Dr. Craig Thayer in Raising Expectations.
Hey, happy Monday night, folks. We're glad you tuned in again tonight. We thank God for you. We count you as part of our Raising Expectations family, and we're so appreciative of the things that we hear from you also. So glad you tuned in tonight. We never take you for granted. You are part of this family. As you know, Raising Expectations is a program about seeing what you can do in life to walk through some of the difficulties. We are people of faith. We believe the Bible is the Word of God. We believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God who died on the cross to pay for our sins. And by doing that, we know where we're going when we die. And that's a great thing in this world, to be someone who knows where you're going when you die. But beyond that, in the meantime, until that day comes and God knows the time, He walks with us, gives us insight, understanding, and the ability to care about people in ways that perhaps we never could without the love of Christ in our heart. So we're here tonight on Raising Expectations. You know the team. Many of you hopefully have been talking to them like we talk each week. First of all, on the West Coast, very quickly to put a big breakdown on them, we have Dr. Paul Hall, who's feeling really good now, and he's from, there we go, Lompoc, California, just north of Santa Barbara. He's a retired pastor. He's a theologian. He's a teacher. He's just a great man of God. We've been friends for a long time, over 50-something years, 55 years. And a lot of that in Texas. They're still looking for us, but they haven't found us yet. Right? We're safe. Anyway, we also know that as Paul and I joined together, we go all the way to the East Coast, which is actually the south part of the East, which is there in Georgia, Dalton, Georgia. And we have there Stephanie Thayer with us, who's really, we think, the greatest health and wellness coach you're going to find anywhere in the United States. And we say that because we hear from you about what she means in your life. She also has a great website called Live Your Life Upside Down. And she counsels and works with ladies who call in and check with her. And she shares great insight and wisdom. Most of all, she shares a purpose for their life through Christ and also to encourage them and lifts their spirits up also. So you want to put that down. Live your life out loud. Write that down. Get on that website. And I have a daughter who just loves this website. So she's up in Ohio. So check in on it. You're really going to appreciate that. And her husband, Craig Thayer, is a surgeon. His book is called, he's a neurosurgeon. Not a neuro, a, it's not
general
a
general and trauma.
What do you call
him? He'll fix you.
He's a surgeon. He can do anything just about because he's 6'5" and they lay there and say, yes, sir. Works really good. But anyway, Tank has got a great book out called Saved. And that book is about what God has done in his life. And I love the footnote in the front, finding God in the ordinary. Because you know, if you know the Bible and you know the Lord Jesus Christ, he's at work in the ordinary. Oh, yeah, he can do the big fancy things and blow everybody's mind when we see it. That's incredible. But it's the everyday ordinary things that Dr. Thayer speaks about that he works in our lives in wonderful, wonderful, sustaining ways. So you'll want to get a copy of that book. It's on our website. Again, our website is BBS, and that's my book. It's on there also, too. Legitimate Faith, producing what kind? Authentic hope, which in the scripture means it's going to take place. It's going to happen, as the sayer says. It's endorsed by Zig Ziglar. Zig Ziglar's the one that had me write this book, and I'm very thankful for that. Look forward to seeing him someday in heaven. But as you look on our website, very quickly, our website is bbsradio.com/ Raising Expectations, bbsradio.com/raising expectations. Here it is, and you'll be able to read about all the people. We'll tell you a little bit about that later on too, and the books are on there. And there's a place for your comments also, and you can check our programs. You got Dr. Robbins on there 2-3 times, and I know that some of you commented me even this week that you went back and listened again. You're so glad that he's with us tonight. So drop him a note, and we're going to introduce him to you here in just a minute, and write him a note again and let him know how much you appreciate him. But we also have, if we travel east again from the south, which we went to from the west, well, I'm getting dizzy, Steph. Anyway, we're going to go back straight across, what would that be, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and east Texas, get to the central Texas, you get to the Dallas Conference. Complex. And in the Metroplex in McKinney, you will find our favorite pastor in the state of Texas, Ron Greer. There he is right there in McKinney. And Ron is back from a great anniversary last week, 45-year anniversary. We think that's really terrific. And Ross has put up, been married to him for 45 years, and that's great.
She's a blessed woman.
Yeah, that's right. She's a talented woman. It's fantastic. Yeah, she can hear me. She's good.
He's going to be right behind you, Ron.
That's right. He's standing right there. Welcome. It's good to have him back, and they had a wonderful time, I'm sure. And Ron is a counselor with Man in the Mirror, which is based out of Florida. And you can see his information there, Man in the Mirror. You can go on that website and read some about Ron. Contact him. Give him a good word. And he's right there. You'll love getting to know Ron more also. And like I said, on our website, you can read about everybody, Dr. Hall, all the way down the line. They're all listed there. You can read a little bit about them. So we hope that you'll take time to do that, as many of you tell me that you do. And we really appreciate that. Now, tonight we have as our special guest, as you know, one of our friends that we appreciate and pray for each week, and that is, as you know, Dr. Jim Robbins, and he came back with us. As he said, it worked out for part two of this wonderful time together with him. And I shared with you a week ago, he's got knowledge in so many areas, from history to, I tell you, his history on Gettysburg is absolutely incredible, and you will want to read those books. Just look him up, Google him up, and at the at his number there, which is WIP, IWP, Institute of World Politics. Thank you, IWP.edu. Jim is a very, as you know, humble man of faith and understanding. He's highly respected as a writer, a professor, a national security expert with a strong public policy background. He knows things, folks. His specialties include politics, defense, international affairs, communication strategies, and military history. So much more could be said about Jim, friends, including his attentive, focused, sensitive abilities, the way he leads discussions, revealing information to people. As one person said to me, shows a deep maturity and a wealth of wisdom hearing. So when he shares information, people not only listen, but they feel comfortable to take it in and actually learn and grow from it. A lot of people can give you information, but not as many as this man right here have the ability to bring it across to you. So Jim's back with us tonight, and we want to welcome him with a round of applause. Jim, welcome to our program tonight, Raising Expectations. And again, IWP.edu. We'll give you more of that later. And we're sure glad you're with us tonight, Jim.
Oh, thanks, Joe. And thanks for that kind introduction. It's great to be back with you and the team. Yeah. I always enjoy this. Always have a great exchange. So, raring to go.
There you go. Well, you kind of know this crew now, so that's good. You're part of this family. But I thought I'd launch out one question first, and then I know Ron's got something ready to go to, and everybody. Maybe give us your thoughts on the upcoming debate on Thursday night between the president and President Trump.
Well, it's going to be interesting, that's for sure. the way they've set it up, it seems like it's almost stacked against President Trump. No audience, so he can't gauge what's going on with the audience. I don't know if President Biden also tries to read the audience, but I did read an interview that President Trump did with Byron York, in which he talked about that, how he tries to see how things are landing by how the audience reacts.
Oh, yes.
Having moderators who are not in his camp for sure. I mean, it's one thing to have like neutral people, but these
Yeah.
are like actively Trump-hating people. So they're going to try to skew it in a certain way. And again, probably try to help President Biden. And also, there are commercial breaks. Unlike other presidential debates that we've seen, this one will have commercial breaks. So if one or the other candidate appears to be, not completely there, then
Yes.
maybe they can get a nice cup of coffee or something,
Yeah,
or
or
whatever
something.
perks them up.
Yeah,
Yeah.
right.
Vitamin B shot, I don't know.
Or something.
So, I mean, so in that perspective, just from the way that it was set up, and I know that it was a proposal from the Biden team that President Trump sort of preemptively just sort of said, okay, fine, without any kind of negotiation. And that was read as a mistake on his part. But what he said in this recent interview was he was trying to show them that he's not afraid of anything. That
Yeah.
they can set it up any way they want, and he'll show up and he'll do what he needs to do. So at least going in, and also he's not preparing. That's the other thing. With the Biden team, they've been like in deep preparation for weeks. And he canceled, he cleared his schedule, canceled his appearances and so forth so he could prepare. But President Trump is going in, and whether it's true or not, I think it is true that he hasn't been preparing in a formal sense. But all these rallies and where he's connecting with people and listening to people, I think that's his preparation.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting to see whether the more structured, formal Biden approach is going to be more effective than the kind of off-the-cuff, loosey-goosey Trump approach.
Right. Interesting. Anybody else? Yeah, that's
You see
interesting.
in Philadelphia where Trump asked the crowd if he should be nasty or nice? Did you see that? And he kind of gauged it on applause on which way he said, So should be interesting to see what happens. The crowd seemed to favor being nasty, and so they're kind of amped up for that. But and it was in Philadelphia, which is an interesting place too. But I thought that was an interesting question that Trump posed to the audience. What do y'all think I should be? So.
Lord.
With respect to the 2020 debate, there was a dig on Trump's performance, the first debate, I think it was, where he was just interrupting Biden all the time, and wouldn't, and that had a negative effect on him, that he wouldn't let Biden speak. And in this debate, the mics are going to be shut off for each candidate while the other guy is talking. And frankly, I think that helps Trump because. Because he won't be interrupting, it may make him appear a little more statesmanlike. And I think that's what he needs, frankly, because the other side is running on the narrative that he's a threat to democracy, he is the embodiment of January 6th, whatever that means. And that kind of thing. Like, he's out of control, he's a radical, and so forth. By preventing him from being more spontaneous, I think it automatically will make him look more controlled and statesmanlike. And I think that actually works against the Biden people.
Interesting. Yeah, that's true. Good point.
Well, I was actually thinking that same thing myself, and I was wondering.
Right.
No,
Right.
it did. I was one of those about the opinion initially that when you agreed to their criteria. So you're going into this thing on a 3 or 4 to 1 sort of disadvantage, but then you think about it. Actually, it's a pretty brilliant strategy if you are really good on your feet, and I think that's the one advantage Trump has, which and again, if you listen to some of the folk around him, that's one of their frustrations. He doesn't wouldn't stick to the teleprompters. He didn't do the prep, the speech prep in the beginning. And it shows, but he's very, very good off the cuff. He just doesn't do well in the formal environments I've seen him in. I put it that way. So I, on one hand, I think it's kind of pretty brilliant, but as you said, I think also the necessity for getting other folks on board and taking him seriously. Again, that part of the party who thinks that he's just a bull in a china shop. I think it'd be good for them as well.
Yeah, as one commentator said, just don't say you're fired, whatever you do. That was on Newsmax. Yeah.
Now, I do have on another topic, mainly because it's been something I've been debating with some people on. The Chinese Communist Party, it's, I think that we have this idea that they're this military threat and they're building up the military. And that this one particular group of friends are horribly overworking themselves on the Chinese military threat. And I'm the guy in the room saying, I don't think the military threat is as bad as the other areas of China's threat. So this way, my military background, you know, you always have these four different, what do you call it? So you get these four different areas of warfare, right? There's land, sea, air, and blah, blah, blah. And then we have later on introduced this information. So you got cyber warfare and advanced warfare. I think China takes that to another level. There's this psychological warfare that takes place. And in my mind, they become absolutely wickedly brilliant with it. So you got politics, you have the cyber the attacks, you have the informational warfare. And I think things like TikTok, it's probably one of their prime tools to use for that. What better way of understanding and also manipulating your enemy than through something like that? So what do you think? Am I way off?
No, you're way on, because it's true. China, and not to downplay the military threat, which is growing, right. And we can all right. acknowledge that. On the other hand, China hasn't fought a war since 1979 against the one they fought against Vietnam, which they lost. Look at the information domain, or you could call it political warfare. You could call it psychological warfare, what have you. This has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
The communist countries excel at this. They have to, because their number one target for this kind of warfare is their own population. Right. So they wage it internally against their own people. Then they wage it externally against us. And the Soviet Union did this for years. Mm. And now China is doing it against us. And so where does TikTok fit into that? Well, you can look at TikTok as, for example, a spyware problem. You know, like they're spying on us through TikTok. If you download the app, right? Well, that's true. Like on, you know, your phone, every app you have is spying on you. I hate to tell you. Yeah. every app in some way or another, every app is spying on you. Okay, TikTok will spy on you. But that's not the insidious part of it that you're talking about. It's how they manipulate the algorithm of TikTok. It's how they present things to you and to your kids, more importantly, to America's youth, who are the main users of the thing. And a good way to look at this is check out how TikTok works. It has another name. I forget the name, but they have a version that's in their country that's different and outside their country. In China, in communist China, the things that are elevated in the algorithm, the things that they want people to see are like patriotic, pro-China, pro-hard work, pro-family, you know, pro the wisdom of Chairman Xi, you know, the great genius, and all that kind of stuff. The things that the algorithm elevates in our country are, you know, bizarre things, you know, sexual things, violence, hate America type things, all the negative things. Mm-hmm. So right there, that tells you, like, well, wait, why are they in their own country? They have one message. In our country, it's a totally different approach. And that's because they manipulate that algorithm. Mm-hmm. Also, inside China, if you're under 12 years old, you only get, it's like an hour or something a day on that thing. Mm-hmm. If you're up to 18, maybe you get a couple hours. So they limited exposure to kids. because kids are the ones who get addicted to this stuff and get things from it. Of course, that's also limiting their pro-China messages, but they just don't want kids addicted to social media. In our country, there are no limits. You can have it all day long, every day, as much as you want. So that's another thing that tells us that this is a problem. And yes, it is consciously being done by the Chinese Communist Party as part of an overall plan to subvert our society, to subvert our national will, and all of the things that make it great here.
And that's
I,
what
what on that on that same subject, so again, I go me and my friends. I see, so we got the psychological part of the warfare. I think there's this economic warfare going on as well for a number of years. And actually, I think Donald Trump for the last 35 years have been talking about China and its disadvantage. And I think he's one of the few people around who've seen it, but I still sometimes wonder if he's really understands it. Anyway, so that's another issue. What you have, Steve, you can address. And number three is the political influence and political sort of warfare they wage. I don't think people actually understand just how many tentacles they are that actually reach inside. So let me what do you think? What do you think? What do you think?
Yeah, 100%. And at our school, we talk about how a good strategy will integrate all of your instruments of national power. We're actually not great at that in this country. We have been great sometimes, like the Reagan administration was very good at this. And during the Eisenhower administration, they were pretty good at it. But we're not so good at it now. The Chinese are great at it. They integrate everything, whether it's the economic tools, the informational tools, their intelligence gathering, their military tools, everything. It's all integrated and part of a single strategy to subvert our country, to subvert Western democracy, and really to subvert world order. So we need to learn from them. It's one thing, A, recognize the threat, recognize what they're doing, and I think more and more we're doing that. But B, we have to organize to defeat it. And if our country was a lot better at doing what we used to be able to do, have our own information warfare, our own political warfare, we have pretty good intelligence actually, so that side we're good on. Reconstitute our military. Just take that full spectrum peace through strength approach. I think we do really well. And let me just give a plug to it. There's a paper that our chancellor, Dr. John Linkowski, who was part of Reagan's National Security Council, he recently published a paper on China. It's at the IWP website somewhere. And it's a fantastic laydown of the problem and the solutions like we were discussing.
John Kachowski.
Linkowski.
Linkowski, okay.
Linkowski, yeah, Dr. John Linkowski. I forget the title of the paper, but it's his latest paper on China. It's fantastic.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Very good. Yeah, I do. I'm they think I'm a bit paranoid and I'm a bit of a theorist, conspiracy theorist. But I see China as being I'm our greatest threat, much more than Russia, anybody. I mean, outside of our own internal own internal threats. But I see them as one of the most our biggest threat. And primarily because back to what you alluded to, it's primarily our ignorance and inability to even focus and grasp what it is they're doing. And I think one of the other problems is, again, I see is we are accustomed to things being instant and done quickly and done over a short period of time. Just the Chinese I've known, it's like there's this sort of ingrained in them, this sort of long view of everything. It's never just immediate. It's like what's go they're planning over the long term, generational sort of view of things. I really I and I again I sincerely think they're much better at that than we are, and they're patiently sort of plodding along and eventually one day get to a point where we won't be the threat that we have been for years. Right. Anyway, that's just enough. That's one of my other thoughts. Sorry.
Oh, Steve, you got a thought on that? That's good,
Me?
huh?
I mean, I think it's so hard because the youngins, I think the data is half of everyone under 30 is on TikTok.
Yes.
So, you know, they definitely know how to market and get to the young influence, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I do think we need to still have defenses for typical war military efforts that we think about, but there's a lot of other strategies now and a lot of other things, infrastructure, all kinds of things we need to be aware of, technology. And so it's interesting because if I'm being honest, I like the functionality of TikTok a lot better than some of the other platforms. Yeah, I know, Ryan, Craig's like, get off that. It's very easy to search on. You get what you want, right? Like, it's appealing, but then what are they doing with it? And I think we do forget how much is tracked right here on our phone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everything all the time. They're listening. They know where you are, whoever they are, you know, Google, whoever it is.
It's why I finally broke down and got a device. I won't say the name or it'll ask me questions because I realized it's already listening anyway. So yeah. I think that it's not in my house. It is in my house.
Yeah. Well, you know, I with my, you know, the nephews and nieces and the young people who are on it, it's like you they show you something. And then you kind of sit with them and watch, and it still amazes me how they sort of understand what you're talking about, but they also understand, somehow it understands what you're interested in. And if you watch it, look at them, right? It finds out what grabs their attention, and then it keeps feeding them, and then more and more and more of it. When they will literally sit there for 2 hours going through one thing, and I'm going, it is a wickedly brilliant and I think one of the most dangerous things ever. And again, when my little great nephew, he had a phone when he was six. And he hacked my Instagram account at 6 years old. He learned from TikTok. I had to shut it down and read and set up a whole nother account. I just think it's just sort of hideous. I mean, absolutely wickedly brilliant and dangerous. I really do. And I have no idea why parents don't get it. Why do you hand your 10-year-old a device? I just don't get it. I don't.
I thought it was interesting when, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's a babysitter, right? I mean, how many times now, if I go to a restaurant and I see that, they're all on their phones. And when we go as a family, and I have older kids now, like we'll bring a game to play. And we've had wait staff say to us, I can't believe you guys are all interacting and playing. We're like, yeah, you know, and we did that when they were young, but it's the same. I think we're aware of some of it in our school system because we can see what's happening with the indoctrination here in the United States, but we're not so much seeing it. And Meta does the same thing. So Facebook, Instagram, all of them, like they want you to stay on it. That's what they're in the business for. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was amazed at the what I call the addiction. I used to help give a SAT and ACT test, right? Process the text. And they have an instruction online when they register for the SAT or ACT test that you cannot have your phone on. And if it goes off, if it dings anything, we take your test, we disqualify you, and then you have to leave the campus. We tell them when they come in during the instructions at the beginning, we tell them the same thing, go to the same list of things. And then just before the test starts, that one thing is again. So we ask them, put your phone on the table or turn it off. I've never proctored a test, SAT or ACT test, where at least one student didn't get kicked out because they could not disconnect from their phones. It's absolutely satanic to me. Anyway, sorry. Let's move on.
That's a tough one. Are they doing anything at IWP with that? I mean, they probably are read all over the world. Wow.
Well, we talk a lot about it, and we're looking into starting a communications program that will look more into social media and its effects. Because, I mean, from our point of view, it's kind of a national security threat. But it's also an opportunity. If we had a way to go into other countries, like Iran or North Korea or Russia, China, places where people don't have access to information, and somehow get them access to information through some of these means, that could be a great force for change and for human freedom.
Well, I think Iran Alive has been doing that for a couple few years. They have satellite TV. Maybe I shouldn't say this publicly, but they figured out to get a satellite TV inside Iran that was basically illegal. Maybe I shouldn't say that out loud here. What am I doing? But I agree. It's a
Channel.
great tool. I mean, if you can use it for good.
Yeah, from
So.
different frequencies in World War II, where they talk and shift around all the time on bombers and everything, all the way to what you're saying now, where they got something in their hand with and satellites. Of course, China saved a lot of money. They're spying. They don't have to put quite so much human into those expensive satellites. They just have a good blow up machine. They can blow up the balloons, right?
Right,
So
just float across.
the good old fashioned balloon that used to work in the Civil War, right, Jim? They go up and then they got shot down and see who's where,
Right.
Well,
Well,
that's just
if there's nothing else, I have one more thing on China I'm going to ask you about. Again, another one of these theories. So I have no folks who work in the drug interdiction, and I have, again, a lot of folks on the drug side of treatment and so forth, right? So there's all of a sudden there's this huge flow of fentanyl. That's the one we get, and all other drugs across the southern border. There's also this flow of guns and weapons across the southern border. But just strangely, it exploded about the time Trump left office. Now, on top of that, he's got video of literally hundreds of Chinese nationalists on days on end coming across the border. Am I paranoid, or is that part of China's strategy, that multi-pronged strategy rather?
it is part of their strategy. Didn't they recently uncover or round up a guy who was facilitating this? No, I think it was just reported on a guy in China who was facilitating the migrant traffic into the United States. Russia, incidentally, after Finland said they were going to join NATO, Russia started weaponizing refugee flows by letting by like sending hordes of refugees, whatever they were, migrants, illegals, into Finland. Like, just they kind of opened their border and said, hey, go destabilize that country. So yes, these population flows are definitely a weapon that can be used by countries. I think it's being used by China. And why not, right? I mean, look at it from their point of view. We have this weakness, we have this vulnerability. They hate us, they're trying to destabilize us, so why not?
Yeah, exploit the weakness. Yeah. All right. Wow.
Am I right that the only nation there in NATO is Hungary, that's totally walled in? Every square foot of their boundary is walled and guarded. I think, is that, did I get that right, Jim? I think that was one I was reading
Yeah,
about.
also, well, Poland too. Poland's not letting people in.
They wall it into you. Yeah.
Oh, their president is a bigot. Oh my God, he's terrible, they say.
Yeah. Right. I thought it was interesting on TikTok that, again, not a very important note, but an interesting side note that, they tried to put President Biden on TikTok, and it took about 2 or 3 months. He had 140,000 followers. That seems pretty big. And then President Trump went on. And how much was it? Was it like 3 million or something? It
Yeah,
was
within 24 hours.
within
He's
24
fast.
hours. Yeah, watching him on, saying, I think I'm a nice guy. It was pretty funny the one he put it on. So
Wow.
he didn't do Chinese though, so I don't know if they have a copy of it or
But I
All
also think it's interesting that you ban government phone from being about government phones and offices, and then you're on it for the campaign. That seems like a contradiction to me, but that's just me.
Yeah. I guess they decided the Republicans, I don't know, here's a thought for you. The Republicans, I've heard so many saying, the Democrats fight dirty. They just fight dirty. Everything from the mail-in ballots, the way they dated them, they're running them around, so many different things. Republicans said, if we're going to get a fair match with this, we've got to stop going by the book and stand up and give them their own medicine. So, I mean, if we're going to skirt them on a battle, on Civil War battlefield, we're going to have to watch the flanks like they've been coming in. So maybe that's why I did it. Jim, you have any thought on that? Somebody asked me once, I said, I'm not sure, but I think they're just doing what they've been doing. It seems to have been working to pull back in Pennsylvania and in Minnesota. I guess a couple others, they've been digging up some stuff.
Well, with respect to the TikTok thing, maybe they were just trying to make a point that the president of the United States, Biden, goes on TikTok and gets a few hundred thousand followers after weeks and weeks and weeks. And then the Trump people were like, we'll show you how it's done, right? He goes on, bam, millions. But I mean, who would you rather watch, really?
Yes. Right.
Yeah. I mean,
right.
Think about
yeah.
it.
Right.
Trump's yeah. entertaining, for sure.
Yeah. What is Biden doing on TikTok? Is he staring at it? What is he doing?
I'm sure it's not his.
Well, it was a couple of them, and it was scripted. Where they said it must have been put up in 5 to 6, 8 different parts because there was a couple of skips in it where they didn't blend the tape right. We used to say we didn't splice it right, but there's something on the computer they do, and it didn't come out right, one of them said. I don't know, Paul, you have a thought on that, or?
You know, what happened to the dust-up from the government about TikTok? You know, they were all running around and let's do something, got to do it now, got to act, got to act, got to do it. And then all of a sudden, you don't hear it anymore. Where did it go? I mean, with the politicians, where did it go? Yeah, in terms of doing something about it.
I think the House wanted to do something about it. I think the Senate was less interested in it. And now TikTok is suing about it. There's a court case I just read about. So
no, there we go. Yeah.
It's still getting figured out. But once the litigation part is figured out, I think that they're going to have to sell it or do something.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had to be owned by an American company, and no longer Chinese, right?
Chinese-American company, right? Yeah. I have just a question as y'all are talking to people in your neighborhood, your neighbors, et cetera, et cetera. I find in talking to some of my neighbors, there's a real apathy about what's going on. I mean, they don't seem to be paying attention, nor, you know, they just think, you know, I'm not going to waste my time watching it or being informed or having an informed decision. And the apathy is scary. You know, I think it opens the door for the plan, you know, and I think those plans they're pre-planned. They know where they want to go. They know what they want. I agree with you, Ron. They take the long view, and we're not particularly good at that. But I think that's a scary thing is apathy. You know, they just, you know, so what? Government will take care of us. You know, if we get in a war, we'll win. We're America. And what does that mean? Maybe y'all read this or heard this too, that the Chinese boarded a Philippine warship. Is that true? Did I read that correctly? You know,
they rammed it.
Okay.
Ramming.
The Coast Guard.
Well, that's part of this conflict that's been going on in the South China Sea or Philippine Sea, depending on what you want to say. But over these shoals and these sort of artificial islands and areas that China is trying to claim are theirs to extend their border. And there are certain areas that the Philippines claims and that Philippine ships have been out patrolling and even occupying in some cases. And so China has responded with like trying to push them off or using fire hoses, you know, to spray them. And now they're up to ramming. So they're experimenting with all of these like measures short of war, like not opening fire, but just like doing forceful things that try to make the point that they're here because they want to physically occupy it and then like build air bases on it and stuff like they have done. Mm-hmm. So it's all in that context. In this case, the Filipinos are pretty mad about it and they're starting to fight back, but we'll see how far they can go.
Right. Yeah, some scary stuff out there.
Yeah, you know, scary stuff. That's one of those. Yeah, I agree. Scary things because you know you have China with the skirmishes with India, you have the skirmishes with the Philippines, you have them in Taiwan, and a couple other places that don't get any news coverage. And you go, why is that? What is it that drives China to be stretching out on all these other areas it hasn't done before? What's the philosophy behind that, or the motive behind that?
Well, part of it is that they're communists, and this is what communists do. And people try to downplay that fact, but it's true. The other part is there's a tradition in China of a national self-view that they are the most superior and only country in the world. And they do not believe in the international system of sovereign states. And they've stated as such, and I'm not making this up, they are challenging the system of every country in the world being equal, which is what it currently is. Every country is sovereign and equal, like in the UN or in international law. China believes that there's China and there's everybody else. And China is number one. They are the middle kingdom. They have the mandate from heaven. And everybody else is just elsewhere. They're just nothing. They exist to serve China. And they would rather have the world oriented that way than as it currently is. And the main country standing in the way of that vision is the United States, of course. So this is another reason why they want to get us out of the way so that they can be the world hegemon, and they can institute a new global order with them at the center of it.
I'm trying not to dominate here, but
well, maybe Stephanie has something to say.
Yeah.
Well, I know one of the I actually had a long list because we're like, what else is there to talk about? And I went to everything. I'm like, there's so much to talk about. Let's talk about Ukraine and Russia. But I thought I knew you might have another way to go. Any updates? Any thoughts?
That's a really frustrating situation to look at because basically, they're in a stalemate militarily. One side will make a few little gains, then the other side will make a few little gains and push them back. So in that respect, it's frustrating because nothing else is going on. It's interesting to watch some of the things at the margins, like Russia's fleet getting run out of the Black Sea by a country without a navy because the Ukrainians are using these drones to like sink Russian ships. And it's incredible. I mean, more ships have been sunk since World War II all of a sudden, you know, like from Ukraine. And they don't, you know, like the Houthis are busy sinking ships, too. Now they've suddenly figured out how to actually sink ships. So this is like a new dimension in naval warfare that's really interesting to watch. And I'm sure our Navy people are following it closely. But when you look at things like a possible political solution to Ukraine, it just isn't there. This is, by the way, this is going to be a huge thing during the debate this week because Biden is going to pound, you know, the desk and say, you know, we have to support Ukraine no matter what. And if President Trump says anything else than that, then he'll be accused of being pro-Putin or something like that. Mm-hmm. But here's the fact, and I'm not pro-Putin, but I can read a map. And right now you have Russia, their peace plan that they introduced is basically if Ukraine acknowledges all the land we've stolen, then we're good. And the Ukraine peace plan is give back all the land that you've stolen. Well, there's no compromise between those two positions. So there's no grounds for negotiation, right? It's just not going to happen because both sides are dug into those positions. So what happens? People keep dying. We keep sending money, weapons, what have you. Russia keeps getting their stuff. They're supplied by Iran. They're supplied by China. So they'll keep fighting. And it's just, you know, dead Ukrainians. That's what we're going to wind up with. But they want to keep fighting. They keep fighting. Russia has 3 to 4 times the number of mobilization base of Ukraine. So Putin doesn't care. He'll empty his prisons. He'll send his young people, conscripts, get them killed. He doesn't care. It's just going to go on forever like that, and no good is going to come of it.
Bad.
Well,
I hate to say that.
Wow.
Well, really, there's no foreseeable end at all, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's. I mean, I think, it's one of those horrific situations facing the world, I'd say. And as you said, you have someone who doesn't care, who is willing to take the loss strictly for some idea and some possible benefits, whereas you have the other ones who don't have a chance in the dark. But then again, you've had this campaign where PR event where everybody has to be behind the losing side, no matter what. And you, as you said, you look at it and going, wait a minute, 1 plus 1. All right, they still lose. So what's the point? And you get, and I, to, in my mind, it's Ukrainians are sort of sacrificial lambs, you know, to, for everybody else to sort of make a point. And that's one of those horrific things to me. It just reeks of all kind of a war crime to me. But that's just me.
Yeah, I heard a lot of that. You know, with your Department of Defense background, along the lines of what they're all sharing, boots on the ground, the old phrase, you know, that comes back to us over and over. Do you have any thought on the boots on the ground and the kind of technological warfare leading possibly all the way to Star Wars like Reagan without having to say too much on it? But I read things and I wonder, you have a thought on that?
You mean like in Ukraine?
Yeah, like boots on the ground. Say, we got to win them, beat the enemy over there. Otherwise, we'll have to fight them with all those troops here. But I wonder how many troops are really going to be fighting once they start pushing buttons? Or like you say, they don't have a navy, but they're sinking the Russian navy.
I mean, if you're talking about sending American troops to Ukraine, is that what you mean? Like our
yeah,
troops?
Or anywhere in the hotbed right now. Could happen. They won't do it with Trump, I don't think, but even if like Afghanistan and other things, if a war were to start, how much is it going to be troops on the ground? How much is it going to be people behind windows with buttons?
Oh, yeah. Well, there will always be troops on the ground because that's how you seize ground.
Okay.
And that's what people usually want to do. But as we've seen in Ukraine, the drone war and, you know, using HIMARS and other types of, you know, strike munitions, that's really how that war is being fought now. Basically, the defense is so strong now that armor is not as effective as it used to be, and neither side wants to commit air power, you know, to a ground support mission because they'll get shot down, and then you lose your multi-million dollar aircraft. So you wind up with this kind of stalemate, this kind of trench warfare. And it's fascinating to watch. I wouldn't want U.S. troops to be involved in that kind of fighting. But I don't think we would be, because wherever the United States has fought, at least since World War II, we've had control of the air. We've had air dominance, you know, or air supremacy. And that makes a huge difference. And we still have the dominant air force in the world. So if we got into a fight, we would control the air. And that would make a huge difference. But in the case of a place like Russia, you always have to remember the nuclear dimension. If it was just conventional war, we could intervene right now and just clean them out. I mean, I'm positive of that. We could just take care of it. But then you start a nuclear war, which you kind of don't want to do.
And Putin has at least on at least two occasions even indicated his willingness, if the game goes too far, he's willing to do that. He's issued that threat. I think one of the unforeseen, sort of unpredicted consequences of Ukraine.
You got about 2 minutes, Ron. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. It's the fact that everybody had an idea how strong and powerful the Russian army was, military was. And it's sort of their underwear showing that people are figuring out that, wait a minute, maybe they aren't as strong and as organized and as which that's one thing I don't think anybody counted on. Which is why I think Putin becomes desperate after saying that, okay, I'll be willing to use nuclear weapons if it comes down to it.
Yeah, that's good.
That's a dangerous thing.
You think that's good, huh? Well, folks, listen, we're going to take a quick break. Hang tight, keep that thought. We'll come through. It's Stephanie. We're going to call Hutt, take the ball and sign it over to Stephanie.
Put the you did a good job at the beginning. You nailed it. You started.
I had a good coach. I listened to what you say like 10 minutes.
Okay, well, You can always stay connected with us at bbsradio.com/raising expectations. Don't worry, if you do the wrong slash, it won't work. So you'll figure it out because I have done that. Right there at the top, you can listen in to the different channels. There's all kinds of good things happening at BBS. You can listen to us live as well there and on all the different social media platforms. And then on the other side at the top, you can see how you can donate financially. You can also contact Joe directly about that. We always love and greatly appreciate your donations. If you keep going down, you'll see we have recordings if you want to get past shows. They're all there, kind of tells you who our guests are with us. And then when you keep going, you can learn out about each co-host, how to find us on different places, what we're doing, books that Pastor Joe has written, my husband has written, all kinds of goodies are on there. So that's kind of your one-stop shop if you're wondering what we are up to.
Thank you, Steph. Ladies and gentlemen, we should appreciate that too. We could use the financial help. We always get by, God bless us, but you know, we could use your help. We appreciate it. Jim might think about it. Someday, I don't know if you have any legal complications, you can let us know, but we'd love to put your book on our website too. Like the first couple of books you put up were just fantastic. And we'd direct people to you at EDU, I guess, there. It'd be great. Put them up, a picture of, especially that Civil War.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Absolutely. Jim, give us a wrap up. We've got, let's see here, Jim. Let's see, Ron.
He gave us 7 more minutes, he says.
Yeah, we've got 4 more minutes. Yeah, four more minutes.
Well, I thought we had 7 extra minutes.
I used 3 of them. We went into it already. Yeah. Do you have a quick question?
I have 4 more points.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ron.
Choose one, Ron. Choose Ron one, your best one.
We go to 2 hours.
Give me a wrap up on the terrorist threat from the southern border. That's one I didn't get to.
Oh, sure. Well, we did discuss this last time, but it gets back to that point we made about China. Like, our adversaries would be foolish not to take the advantage of this wide open border and to bring people in. And we had those folks from Tajikistan who were arrested, who had been planning something. They'd been under surveillance for a long time. And finally, the security forces decided to act. We had that incident at Quantico. 2 illegals, 1 overstayed a student visa, 1 had come in on the southern border and was apprehended and then released, and they tried to bust through the gate at Quantico, at the Marine Corps base. So those are 2 incidents. We had another alert I saw just today from, I forget which agency, government agency, but they were talking about the increase in the rise of the terror threat. The FBI director, the attorney general, the head of Homeland Security, all these people have said we have a problem, and they've all said it's related to the southern border, which when you consider the fact that for a long time, the Biden administration denied that. Yeah. And said, you know, and if you said otherwise, you were some kind of, you know, crackpot. Now they're warning us.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Fine. Vindicated again.
There you go. That's it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're so glad you tuned in tonight, and it's great to have you with us. And if you, like you say, thank you for the donations, thank you for the prayers, and Jim, we sure appreciate you, sir. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for IWP and all the folks there, Western civilization, and we're proud to be Americans. We're proud for what it stands for, and we really believe we're the greatest experiment in the history of the world when it comes to a nation, and proud of so many things. Family we've had die on the beaches in World War II. And when I see the American flag, you know, I don't worship the flag, but I sure am thankful for what it means, even the stars and the stripes and what they stand for. Yeah. So we'll be thinking about you and be praying for you and getting back in touch with you. When do you go back to IWP? When does it launch up? You got some...
Well, we have a summer term that's going on right now. We start up again in the fall with the regular term. But, you know, since I'm the dean, I'm working all the time anyway.
So. That's right. You did that too. There you go. Well, we'll pray everything goes actually perfect and whatever the needs are, that they work out beautifully for you. And God bless your family. And know that we sure appreciate you. You make a great mark and touch a lot of lives through this show and our folks. And they all say thank you. Yeah. So, Paul, it's good to see you. And Happy trip day two, and all the what the guys are doing in Stephanie's home. It's fantastic. It's good to see you, Steph. Ron, welcome back. And we'll be ready. If they try to come through the southern border too much longer, we're going to unleash Ron on them.
We got Texas here. Trust me. We're going to hold ours.
That's right. Hey, we're in good hands. We're in good hands. Send in the Marines. All right.
Yeah. Don't mess with Texas.
Yeah, don't mess with him. All right. All right. God bless you, sir. And thanks, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in.
Sir.
Have a great day. Remember the 4th of July. Remember what it stands for. Be proud you're an American. Be proud of what's been given to you in this land, and stand up. Get out there and vote. Get out there and vote your heart. Get out and vote your conscience. Get out and vote what's going to make America great again. I've never heard that. It just came to my mind. It's just a suggestion. Okay. Okay. Thanks again. We'll see you all later. We'll talk to you later. Thanks so much.
God bless you. Thanks again.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556, or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.